Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
I'm Manny.
And this is Jay.
And this is your new Comic Book Wednesday episode for February 10th, 2021. I wish I could say it was a better week, guys. But yeah, there were some tough books to get through this week. I think overall, this might be the worst week of Future State. Previously, the worst week was the first week. And then gradually, I was like, we're getting a few decent books here, you know? But yeah, this week was rough. I felt like, you know, we know as things have gone on with Future State, there's been some announcements from DC. Oh, we're going to get a Future State Gotham series. We're going to continue the story here or there or whatever, which doesn't really make sense because, you know, they're all in different times in the future. And part of the reason I went all in on Future State was it was just supposed to be the two issues. So I can kind of see both sides. It's like people feel like, well, why should I bother to read these two issue series when it's going to be like Future's End ones, right? Where you tell this possible story of some possible future of the possible DC universe. And then it doesn't matter because you're never going to go back and revisit it. So the fact that they're still going to tell stories in these possible timelines, it makes the stories have a little more weight, but at the same time, it's still only a possible timeline. And what I keep coming back to is the stories aren't very good. So why would I want to read more not very good stuff? So, you know, when we read all the number one issues thinking, well, maybe if the creators can stick the landings with the second issue, then it can be okay. But instead, we're just getting a bunch of, like, it's just a second issue of a regular series. They don't have any endings, which gives it even less weight in my mind. And it's like, oh, read, especially the one set in Gotham. It's so clear they want you to pick up the Future State Gotham book, which I will not do. It's just not any good. So, but we do have a few books that were halfway decent. Some of them were actually pretty good. Like I said, it's not a total loss this week. But we do want to remind you all, Future State Fridays, we go deep dive into all the Future State stuff. So that is there. And also I'll remind everybody about our Best of 2020 awards, which we released last weekend, Saturday and Sunday. So two-part episode this year, so it wouldn't be super long for you guys. So that's available as well. Anyway, let's go ahead and kick it off. Jay, why don't you give us your first title?
All righty. First one's going to be from DC, Teen Titans Future State. Let's see. It's written by Tim Sheridan, pencils by Raf Sandoval, inks by Julio Ferreira, and colors by, must mess up his name, Legendario Sanchez. I think I'm right on that, I'm not too sure. But yeah, so the story starts off with Red X showing up and getting together the Titans, the Teen Titans, and I guess from the future, I'm assuming, to get ready for a battle against, I don't know if you can, I guess they kind of mentioned the last series, I guess, you know, famine, death, you know, that they're using another character's phone, I guess you could say, you know, I give it away. I don't know if it's even worth even saying it, but the Dial H phone book. And then the two main characters in the whole story, it was kind of hard to get through. It wasn't that good of a story, but the main two main characters at the very end is going to be that kind of put us all together with the battle scene. It's going to be Shazam and Raven. And like I said, it was all right. The artwork wasn't too terrible. It was actually, you know, decent. But the only thing it was kind of, it kind of leaves you with more. This is it. It's only supposed to be a two-parter of what I'm tracking. So now we're going to have to wait for another series to start up again. Is there going to be Future State Teen Titans that we're waiting for, like Academy?
No, that's what I'm saying. You know, you get a two-issue series set in the future, and then at the end it says, how did it come to this? Find out in the pages of Teen Titans Academy coming March 2021. So go find out how all this happened by reading this other series.
Go ahead, sorry.
This issue's a mess. It's a mess. There's no way to even understand what's going on. Like you don't.
Yeah, there are some panels I had to read twice. I was like, okay, what did I just miss?
Yeah, it's like,
But
why did I read these two books? They don't make any sense. In order for these two books to make sense, I got to go read the Teen Titans series that's coming out in March. I'm not going to waste my time with that. It's horrible. Like, I should be able to pick these up and just read them and have the story make sense. But instead, it's, you don't understand why the characters are mad at each other. You don't understand the interactions, what's going on.
Because I read the first one. I thought maybe I missed something because it said, you know, we're getting back with you with, you know, with Raven or not, but the other character, like, I guess there was a fight or something, but they don't really tell you. So I thought maybe I missed something, but I didn't see it.
No, it's a mess. And the art is, I expect way better in terms of art when we're talking about Rafa Sandoval. This is far and away the worst art I've ever seen him do. It's even worse than the art he did in the first issue. So yeah, it's just a mess. It feels rushed and it's scattershot. It's all over the place.
And it's kind of let down because I'm a huge Teen Titan fan. I mean, I even had the very first series run, so that's how much of a fan I am. So I was kind of like, okay, what now?
Yeah, the only redeeming part of the entire issue is on the first page when they kind of make a joke. And I won't mention any more than that because that's the only joy you'll get out of this issue if you read it. So were you going to say something, Manny?
Yeah, no, I was going to say that even if you go back to read the next Teen Titans series, they've already said that it doesn't mean that this is that future state book is absolutely where it's going to land. It's a possible future.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, it was just bad. That's all. Just don't. If you're a huge Teen Titan fan, I guess pick it up. I guess.
No, even if you're a Teen Titans fan.
No, I'm a big Teen Titan fan. I picked it up and I was like, okay, I'm sad.
Yeah, it's not. I you know, it's rough. So read at your own risk. What do you have up first, Manny?
Let's start with, all right, let's get this out of the, not out of the way. I hate to say it that way because I had a lot of fun with it. Aftershock from Aftershock Comics, Scout Honor number 2 by David Pepossi and with artwork by Luca Casalanguida and Andy Clark. We find out in the first issue there's been bombs that fell out of the skies that ended up causing nuclear fire and a lot of people died. And what ended up being was just some people left, and they kind of adopted this new society based off of the Boy Scouts manual or book or whatever you want to call it. So the Ranger Scouts of America, they have pretty much it's society's religion. And their goal and everything is always to be prepared. Something really great that David does throughout the book is always puts little phrases here and there that always remind you that they follow Scouts code. And I always think that's really clever because it kind of reminds you that you know what the theme of it, of their entire system is, and then why makes it for a better book. And so we've been following the story of Kit, who by the end of issue 1, we find out is not thinks she is. And she really wanted nothing more to be a Ranger Scout. But unfortunately, she finds out a few things in an abandoned bunker that kind of change everything. But unfortunately, before she can get any farther with that, there's a gang of murderous highwaymen that breached the Ranger Scout compound. And so she actually gets hurt, but before anybody else is able to get to her, she's rescued by her dad. This is right in the beginning of the book. I'm not really giving much away. There's a lot of stuff going on in this book, and I really appreciated that because I felt like they were able to pack a whole lot of story in these pages, and it didn't feel rushed and it didn't feel like it was clunky or anything. It has really, really good pacing. It really doesn't give you a moment to really kind of get bored with it, and it keeps the story going, which I really appreciate it, especially when you're dealing with developing a good character like Kit and at the same time slowly unraveling this society, this post-apocalyptic society. So it's been fun, and I've enjoyed it. So I'm definitely going to keep reading it. The art is I want to call it mediocre, but not, it's not like impressive art or anything like that. But the story is so good that I don't really pay much attention to some of the details in the art in a book like this.
Yeah, so this book is interesting in as much as when you get the premise, you know, you're told the premise, okay, that's, but it's a society that's basically living by, you know, the Boy Scout manual. And then we meet Kit in the first issue and have the revelation that she's living life as a male when it's actually a female. With those sort of things, I think, okay, well, this is going to be like a character drama, and it's going to be about the, you know, relationship and how Kit keeps her, you know, her true gender hidden and all that. And so I kind of felt that's was going to be the direction of the book. And then I read issue two, and it's like Manny said, it's paced very fast, and it's wall-to-wall action.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden it's like, hey, Kit's kind of a badass, which we saw a little bit of that in the first issue, but she takes it to a whole new level in this issue. So yeah, while I was intrigued with after the first issue, because originally I was like, I don't know. I read the first issue and I thought it was okay. But until we got that reveal that Kit was actually a female, that's what kind of made it feel compelling to me. That's what pulled me in for a second issue. Now this issue, it's just all about the action and the world that David Pepos is creating. So I'm definitely in for issue two. Did you get a chance to check this out, Jay?
Yeah, I've actually got it on my pull list. I like the story. And like you said, it's like, okay, where are they going with it? I just thought it was cool because I used to be a Boy Scout. So I was like, okay, I see where they can go. Oh, nice. How are they going to spin this? So I was like, I got to check it out. But yeah, when they put that little twist of her being a female, I was like, okay, so now they can actually do more concrete stuff with the storyline. And there's a lot of like, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of like double-handed stuff going on down the road, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, folks, first book I'm going to talk about is from Image. It's Undiscovered Country, issue number 12. It's from writers Scott Snyder and Charles Soule. We have art by Giuseppe Camincoli and Leonardo Marcello Grassi. Colors by Matt Wilson. Letters by Crank. And this finishes off the second story arc where the expedition party that's gone into America, you know, if you're not familiar with the story, basically many, many years in the past, America closed off its walls to the rest of the world, completely isolated itself. And time has not been moving at a consistent basis. In America, centuries have gone by, whereas in the outside world, it's only been like 50 years or something like that. So this group of different people from around the world, like diplomats and scientists and that kind of thing, they answer this beacon, and they manage to breach the walls and get into America, and they find out, hey, 200 years or more have gone by, and they're what's called walking the spiral. So America is now divided into 13 zones, and they have to get to the center and talk to Aurora, whatever that is, and see if they can, quote unquote, save America. So the second arc has been them in the second zone, which is called Unity, and it's all about technology. But what we learned throughout the course of the story arc is that unlike the wastelands where they were, the first zone they were in, which is kind of like Mad Max post-apocalyptic, Unity is actually pretty peaceful. People have, you know, enough to eat, and everybody has a place to live. It's clean, medical care, like all that kind of stuff. And it looks sort of like almost a utopia. But what they find is that sort of ability to create that and have that type of zone comes at a very high cost. And once this group of explorers realizes what the cost is, they're kind of not okay with that. And so this last issue of the second arc kind of shows us the consequences and what happens as they prepare to move on to the next zone. That's all I can really say without giving too much away. But all along this book by Scott Snyder and Charles Soule. They've been developing it for a long time, but it's amazing how prescient it is in terms of a lot of the themes they're exploring. You know, they started this book like long before the pandemic and, you know, before all these right-wing fascist groups started popping up in our actual United States. And now all of a sudden it looks like these guys were peering into a crystal ball with some of the themes that they're exploring. But unlike a lot of the books that Manny and I talk about, well, you know, there's going to be this period in time where all the villains are fascists, and it deals with, you know, not wanting to wear masks and all that stuff and how it can remind us of the real world and it doesn't give us any escapism and it can be kind of tedious at times. This takes it to such a far out there level that you don't get any of that. Like, this is so clearly, you know, way in the future with crazy radical ideas that it doesn't feel like they're trying to pull in things from the real world, even though some of the actual concepts are pulled in as far as people not working together and that kind of thing. So it's a really good book. I definitely recommend picking it up. If you're a fan of Charles Soule, especially, I would say pick this up because it's right in his sort of wheelhouse of world building. Scott's more, in my mind, about the relationship and that between characters, and that definitely is a part of this book as well, and something I know they're going to explore even more in the future, because we didn't get a whole lot in this arc of character dynamics between the explorers, as opposed to the first arc where we got a little more of that. So I think in the next arc, we might get a lot more of interaction between the characters and seeing how they play off each other. So, but it's definitely a good book. So anyway, what do you have up next, Jay?
We'll go with Future State Dark Detective. It's chapter 3 called Games. It's by written by Marco Tamke. Art is by Dan Mora. Colors by Jordi Bellary. And letters by Adiga. What am I supposed to
say? Adiga Bidikar,
that's it. Yeah. I like the story because it's got Bruce Wayne in it, I guess. I'm a fan of the Batman. But it starts off with a murder of another CEO person. Of course, Bruce has got to try to do all this stuff with low tech because he doesn't have the money anymore now. So he's got to figure out how to do it, because you read the first one that shows that, you know, he was killed. And you find out reason why behind it, why they're trying to, you know, take all these people out, because the master has a master plan of what they want to do with all, you know, this equipment. And he has a run in with another Batman, I guess. And we know who that is. I mean, if you follow the storyline, you already know it's not a surprise, you know, who it is. I'm not sure if I can say who it is, but yeah.
Yeah, better not. But
yeah, it's on the cover. I don't want to ruin it for anybody.
Yeah, it's on the variant cover. So
yeah. Yeah.
It's known that, yeah, this is where the two Batman come face to face, although it didn't really have much to do with the actual story.
No, I mean, so you pretty much just see how, you know, Bruce is trying to piece everything together. He's kind of living secretive, I guess, in a low profile. You know, he's not in his mansion anymore. He's, you know, somewhere in the, I guess, in the poor east end of Gotham. And Master Ray pretty much watches and monitors everything. The ending was pretty good because you kind of see what was going on, that, you know, unbeknownst to him, you know, that, you know, what was going on there. They already had a better plan than he thought that he had. The second story in the back is called No Future Past Part 2. That one was actually not too bad, because I liked the main character was Grifter with Huntress, and Grifter's just trying to get with Huntress to help him, you know, take someone out of the city. And up to the fight, you got some pretty good fight scenes in it and all that. Then you find at the very end, you know, it's not what you think it's going to happen. It's totally not what's going to happen. But I like the ending because it was actually kind of cool. But then they kind of leave it like that. You're like, is that it? Because they kind of, I don't know, leave you with wanting more, I think.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Like, so this is part two of the Grifter story from Matthew Rosenberg, art by Carmine DiGiandomenico, and colored by Antonio Fabella with letters by Ann World Design. And we only get two issues of Grifter, but again, we know, oh, there's Future State Gotham coming up, and we'll get Grifter in there, and we'll get some Grifter in the Batman anthology book that's coming up. So it's just like I was saying, where here we have these Future State books, but we're not getting the end of any of these stories. It you know, the end of this story is Grifter himself is talking like there's another chapter. So we know there's going to be another chapter. So and based on the first story and the pacing of it, again, there's no way that Mariko Tamaki wraps up the story in one more issue. And so you wonder about, okay, yeah, they wanted the Batman to meet because it's a cool moment or whatever, but it was a waste of real estate, really, because it doesn't matter in terms of the story. And how is she going to wrap everything up? Although I did feel like this was, in terms of the amount of story and the amount of narrative, this issue was where we got the most progression of the story. But I just don't see how she wraps everything up in one more issue. And she probably won't, because again, it's Future State Gotham. So we're going to get more of this. So yeah, it's probably the best of the Future State books this week. And I'd only give it like a 4 out of 10. So that tells you how bad the rest of the books were.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, the first two were pretty good, but then you get so much and more in this one. You're like, okay, I think they were just trying to rush it to get to the last, but it's like, oh man, come on, don't do that.
Yeah. You're going to rush it to get to the last one, but then you're not even going to, it's not even going to wrap up the story. I guarantee you it doesn't.
No, probably not.
What did you think, Manny?
I have read since week two. I haven't read any Future State books. I'm just going to wait it all out.
Fair enough. All right. Well, what do you have for your next book then?
Next book. Luckily, DC is not only just doing Future State from their so good Black Label, American Vampire 1976, number 5, written by Scott Snyder with art by Rafael Albuquerque. And Dave McKay. So this, the story is really, really starting to get to its climatic moment as Skinner, Pearl, and Book are really doing all they can to try and stop the Beast from their world domination. To do this, they needed to go to some mountains where they're going to have to try and convince a council of preeminent ancestral monsters to help them out. And as an offering, they have the head of Dracula, which is something that you can see on the cover. I think the cover is pretty neat. And the problem with these beings is that they're super salty over a broken promise that George Washington had made to them so long ago in history. And the book really goes into detail as to what that was. And it also, obviously, we get to see who these beings are. They're different types of monsters. I thought that they were done very, very well. They're left with an interesting choice. I really don't want to give away too much more to it, because that's really the meat and potatoes of the book. And I find it really entertaining. It's funny, the first, I say it every time, because the first issue I had no idea what was going on. But as we went on, I really, really just locked onto this book, and I really enjoy it. So, I think I should. I'm not sure how many issues total this is going to be, but I don't think that there's going to be too many more. But just so much. It's just such a good story, very entertaining. And it's been also, like my last book, very well paced, I think. And what I appreciate is, even though I haven't actually read the original American Vampire series, this one is, I've been able to enjoy this. And maybe even I'll, like I said, like I've said before, go back and read the original series. Good book from DC. That's not Future State.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be 6. I think there's only one more issue.
That would make sense.
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, let me move on to my next title. It's Commanders in Crisis, number 5, from writer Steve Orlando and co-creator and artist David Tinto. The colors are by Francesca Coratanudo, and letters are by Fabio Amelia. And I gave Commanders in Crisis my best new heroes of 2020. It's a really interesting and diverse makeup of a team here with a bunch of former presidents of the United States from, you know, all over the multiverse. And they're all sort of groundbreaking presidents in terms of diversity, you know, the first gay president, the first Muslim American president, and so on and so forth, you know, black female president, and so on and so forth. So we found out a couple of brutal revelations in the last issue. So all these presidents have come together. They were all former commanders in chief. That's where the Commanders in Crisis comes from. The name of the series, and the crisis part is the fact that something is destroying the Earths of the multiverse, destroying the other, you know, universes. And now there's only one universe left and only one Earth left. And so the main character here has brought all of them together. She saved the other presidents from dying, basically. And she brought them all here. And so what she didn't tell them, though, that we found out last issue, is that this is kind of like Earth 3 in the DC universe. Like, the default is bad. It's evil. Like, evil is good. You know, everything's flipped around. You're expected to be a bad guy. And so, you know, she brought these other guys, these other presidents here, and they're supposed to be saving the world, but they didn't realize that the deck was stacked against them, like, right from the start. And so, you know, when they find that out, it makes things, you know, a lot tougher. And they're pretty upset with her that she didn't tell them from the beginning. And not only that, there's an evil version of her working against them here also. So that makes it even tougher. Her superhero name is Frontier. I should have mentioned that. So yeah, there's an evil version of Frontier who's just as capable and you know, powerful and can plan ahead, but you know, she's doing it for evil. She wants the universes to be destroyed. And on top of that, what happened in the first issue that kind of set all this off was that the kind of the evil diabolical cabal that's after the universe to be destroyed, they basically captured all the empathy in the world and they infused it into one person and then they killed that person. So nobody has any empathy. And we all know from, you know, regular old USA in the real world, how the lack of empathy can really cause a lot of problems when people can't, you know, reach across the aisle when they just, if you don't agree with me, you're my enemy. And it just leads to a lot of divisiveness and vitriol and, you know, all kinds of really bad kind of stuff. And the other thing that Frontier didn't tell her teammates was that the guy that got killed, that was empathy embodied in her original world, was her boyfriend. And so it's, again, the evil version of Frontier doing little things like that kind of, you know, makes it that much harder. You know, she's just bad, you know, definitely Superwoman or Ultraman-esque, you know, to put it in DC terms. The other thing that's really cool about it, because it's Steve Orlando writing it, who, you know, huge DC fan, and there's just all these cool concepts that he puts in here, like the way they keep their prisoners. In terms of, if somebody's a really dangerous prisoner, it's a really unique concept of what they do. And I don't want to give it away because it's so cool. You need to read it for yourself. But things like that, things like the different villains and the superpowers that he comes up with, they're all just really cool and original ideas that I think if you're a DC fan or a comic book fan, a long time, that you will appreciate these kind of cool big ideas of you know, you playing with universes and time travel and all kinds of crazy stuff. So it's definitely a book I would recommend. So check it out. Commanders in Crisis from Image. What do you have up next there, Jay?
Future State, the Green Lantern. Okay. It's called Last Lanterns Part 2. So it's the end of the run, I guess, for the Lanterns. There's only two issues. Writer is Godfrey Thorne. Artist is Tom Rainey. Colors are by Mike Ativia. And letters by Anworld Design. So from the first one, we know that there's no more, Lanterns don't have any more power. So Jon Stewart's pretty much stuck on his planet. That's not Earth. The whole story, it pretty much deals with him, you know, fighting, trying to buy time while the rest of his team try to come up with a plan to get everybody out of the area and whatnot. Some very cool fight scenes in it. The artwork, I don't know. I've seen his artwork before in Black Widow, like Deadly Origin, and that was pretty good. I liked his artwork there. This one, I don't know. I feel like it was kind of rushing it to finish the story. I'm not too sure. But the way this story ends, it's, you know, he's on his own, and that's it. That's how they leave you. He's on his own on his planet. That's it. I'm like, that's it. And the whole concept of the whole thing was just him fighting, you know, while everybody else is trying to do things behind them, trying to get the other people rescued. And that's pretty much it. There's no, they kind of leave you wondering more what happened.
Yeah, I thought the artwork was terrible, even worse than the art in the first issue. Like a lot of the things I complained about the first issue with anatomy problems were exacerbated on this one. And, you know, we have somebody show up at the end, and then I guess Jon Stewart gets a new sort of weapon.
Yeah, I didn't want to say that, but it's just weird because, like, one scene, it has him looking like a gnome. Jon Stewart looks like a gnome during the whole fight scenes. I'm like, yeah, what happened?
And all I can think is, man, it is so obvious with the way that Jon Stewart is able to acquit himself fighting against the, and I talked about this in our Future State Spotlight when we talked about the first week, like he's going up against Kuns, you know, this very military-like race in the DC universe that are trained from birth to do nothing but go to war. And somehow Jon Stewart, you know, he's taken on, I don't know, hundreds of them at once, and he wins the day. Like, and then at the end, the way it all plays out, he's going to be like some like savior, like Joan of Arc or something. Like it's so clear that Jeffrey Thorne just loves Jon Stewart, and Jon Stewart, he might as well be Superman in this. He doesn't even have any powers. It makes zero sense. It's awful. That's all I can say. I will never, never again ever spend any money on a comic that Jeffrey Thorne has anything to do with.
I just got that whole ever watch Army of Darkness, like the very end where he's got his little thing and he's standing on top of the, yeah, that's what I got. Yeah, at the end of that.
Yeah, it's so bad.
So, but
you got anything to say about the,
yeah, so there's actually two backup stories in this. The first one's called Dead Space. It's by Josie Campbell, the writer. Andre Tong is an artist. Will Quintanilla is the colors, and Dave Sharp is the letters. This deals with, I guess, a new Green Lantern. She's it's called the Teen Lantern.
Yeah, she's from Young Justice, Brian Michael.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, I couldn't remember where I saw her before. But yeah, so she's given a mission. They're like, well, this is all we have left. And they're like, we got to give it to her. Like, yeah, but, you know, they're trying to take something off of her before, but they couldn't do it. So they give her a partner, which is funny because you wanted a particular partner, but they're like, no, not that guy. You're going to get this one. She's like, oh, okay. So it's the planet. That's her sidekick. But what I liked about it is because we know that their powers get taken away. So of course, you know, she's going to have little issues. It was all right. The artwork was actually pretty good. It was better than the first story, I guess. it was different. I mean, I liked it. It wasn't bad. It was just one shot and that's pretty much it. I mean, it's just her and on the planet.
Yeah, I thought the artwork was really good. The only problem I have with the story is just Teen Lantern she's just a terrible character. She even says herself, the biggest problem with the character, she says it herself in the story, she wasn't chosen. She doesn't have a ring. She wasn't chosen. She hacked the Green Lantern power. No, all I have to say is Brian Bendis created her, and you should know right there she's a terrible character. She shouldn't exist. and I could not possibly care less about her. I have no interest in reading anything about some 9-year-old that's hacked the Green Lantern and is able to use willpower. No, 9-year-olds don't even have willpower. Okay.
And the color Teen Lantern, which doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Wave some candy in front of her and you'd be able to do whatever you want. why don't you give me that weapon you have and I'll give you this candy bar. Fight over. Yeah. Ridiculous.
The second last story, it's called Recon. It's actually going to have Hal Jordan in it. It's written by Robert Venditti. Artist is Dexter Soy. Colorist is Alex and Claire. And letters by Steve Wands. I like the artwork in this because I just like the artwork. And I like it. It was cool. It's pretty much Hal Jordan trying to figure out what's happening to the Lantern. So he's on Earth and he's trying to get from A to B. He's trying to get back to, the home planet to see what's going on. And it's cool because it shows him going through the galaxy and he comes across, the other Lanterns and other planets and trying to figure out, what's going to happen. And he says, should I stop and fight this? Like, no, I got time. I got to get to Oa. And it's really short, but sweet. And then, he finally gets there and he just, devastated because, it's gone. And you get a little cameo then with someone else, but it was good. I liked it. It was short. Yeah,
I did like it. It's by far the best story in the issue. Like you said, the art's great. It's a Venditti on Green Lantern, which is going to be a winner. The problem I had with it, though, is the ending, and I guarantee it was editorially dictated because it even says, just like a lot of the other books, to be continued in Green Lantern in 2021, in March 2021. Okay, well, we already know that Jeffrey Thorne hates Hal Jordan, and the way this story ends tells me that despite what Jeffrey Thorne has said, I can separate my personal feelings for Hal Jordan from my professional duties as a writer, and I'll give Hal a fair shake. What I see in this story tells me that's not going to be true. So, like I said before, I will not spend a penny on anything that Jeffrey Thorne has to do with. I think it's completely unprofessional. He should not be on a Green Lantern. This is just night and day, the way he feels about Hal Jordan and John Stewart, to the point where John Stewart is like I say, he's like Superman, and Hal's going to get the short end of the stick. Like, no, I'm not.
It's going to make a lot of fans upset because, that's the reason I read Green Lantern, because of Hal Jordan. A lot of the characters are great, but Hal Jordan is the Green Lantern.
Yeah. And it's fine for some people. Green Lantern is John Stewart. That's like Manny. That's his Green Lantern, from the Justice League cartoon. And that's fine, but you don't have to boost one character up at the expense of another character. It's just not necessary. Yeah, the way he's boosting John Stewart is ludicrous. It's ludicrous for John Stewart to be able to take on hundreds of coons and defeat them with no Green Lantern. It would be hard enough for a Lantern to do that with his ring. This guy's got no powers. Yeah, just bad, lazy writing. it's like fan fiction is what it is.
So. Oh, but he was military, so maybe that helps him out. I don't know.
Yeah, these guys are raised from birth to be military. And he's outnumbered,
Oh, yeah. It's a little far-fetched, but yeah, we'll see what happens, I guess.
All right, Manny, what do you have up next? You're muted.
Up next, I have another Aftershock title. Knock 'em Dead number 3. And this one is written, of course, by Elliot Rall with artwork by Mattia Monaco and Andy Clark. So we've been following the story of Pryor Bryce. We know that he was a terrible comedian, and due to the fact that he was in an accident, one of his buddies was actually able to, in a sense, possess his body and help him out with his act. But unfortunately, what's going on now is that he's kind of taking over his body. He's acting differently, and it's not something necessarily that he's too comfortable with. And this is also coming with the success of him in comedy. He's actually doing a really good job. He's making a lot of people laugh. And as a matter of fact, he just won a stand-up competition where he made some money. And he actually even gained the ability to get an audition for a late night gig. But this is beginning to be too much for him, too much for his sister. And so what does he decide to do? he decides to go get an exorcist because that's going to solve all his problems. And it's that's really all I'm going to say about the issue, just because of the fact that what happens during the exorcism, what happens after it, and then after that is quite for a very entertaining story. And it's, you know, I had no idea which direction this book was going to go after issue one, because of because it seems so vague and so strange that at the end of the first issue we had the protagonist kind of technically die, and then to see where the direction this is going, it's very, very interesting. I wonder what kind of repercussions some of his actions are going to have going forward. But I will say that based on what Elliot Rall has done before, I have no doubt that it's going to make for a great overall story. But as far as this single issue, it's another fantastic issue. It's just such a good book. And you know, it's definitely up in that caliber that I expect Aftershock titles to be at. So I highly recommend this. And maybe I'll talk about this a little bit later for another reason. But for now, Knock 'Em Dead. Very good.
So, yeah. So I agree. This is my book of the week.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess since you're saying it's your book of the week, it's my book of the week as well.
Yeah, it's so good. And yeah, like Manny said, you know, Elliot Rahal, he's been on the show before. Talented writer, real up and comer. He's written some great stuff over at Aftershock. And yeah, we didn't know what to expect, but in Elliot and Aftershock, we trust. So we came back for the second issue, kind of said, okay, we can see what he's doing here. All right. And now this issue just flips it all on its head. Because even in this issue itself, it's kind of a microcosm of the series so far. You think you know what direction it's going to take. And then all of a sudden, in the third act of this issue, it gets flipped around yeah. again to the point where I was like, no, dude, you're going to go that direction now? I was laughing out loud. Like, I'm like, really? This is what we're going to do? Oh, man. So I expect more wildness to come in the next couple of issues. So, yeah, I think the artwork from Mattia Monaco suits the tone of the story. And that Andy Clark cover is really great also. So, yeah, big ups for Elliot Rahal. This is a great, great issue. All right, well, let me move on to my next book. It's also an Aftershock title. This one's from writer Stephanie Phillips. We have art by Robert Carey, colors by Roche, and letters by Troy Pateri. It's Red Atlantis number 4. And it's so funny because this is a pretty action-packed issue. There's some decent action here, but it still is one of the – it has sort of the least amount of action of any of the Red Atlantis issues so far, which is saying something. The rest have been, well, issue 2 and issue 3 were almost like wall-to-wall action from the first page all the way to the last page. Issue 1 had a little bit of setup. This one's a little bit of a, you know, a slower issue where we see Sasha and we see Miriam, and I still get that sort of Terminator dynamic, you know, the original Terminator with Michael Biehn protecting Linda Hamilton's character. And that's sort of what we have here. You know, Sasha, he shows up and he's protecting Miriam, who has these powers. Her parents worked for the Soviet Union during the Cold War, and they were scientists, and they were able to give certain people these sort of psychic powers to where they can affect machines, and they can kind of for short periods of time take over people and control them and their actions. And Miriam didn't know any of this. She didn't even know what her real birth name was. She was, you know, just a regular American student, Miriam Roberts, and going to school and didn't know any better. And then somehow something's been triggered by the Russians. There was on election day, November 3rd, there was at a couple different election sites, there was some violent incidents where a bunch of people were killed. And that sort of sparked Sasha to realize, hey, Miriam's in danger. He goes and he grabs her and they go on the run, and they're being chased originally by these FBI agents who are investigating the violent incidents at the polling places. But now it's to the point where the people that are behind those incidents, these former Russian KGB agents, they're the ones that are after them now. And they have ties to people pretty high up in the U.S. government, apparently, because they're able to pull strings and kind of manipulate events and things like that. But you also have those two original FBI agents who were on the case that got thrown off the case and said, we're kicking this upstairs, basically. But they're not necessarily willing to let it go. So they're not supposed to be involved, but they're still sort of out on their own trying to figure out what's going on as well. So I think this is only 5 issues, and it's going to be interesting to see Stephanie wrap everything up in only one more. But knowing her, I know she has the skills to do that, but it'll probably be left open for some other story, more story to come. And I should also mention, so the story itself, Stephanie's writing it, but the actual story idea comes from this guy named Janosch Newman and his wife, Victoria Newman. And they were, Janosch was actually a KGB agent for years and years during the Cold War in the Soviet Union. And then he got out of that and worked for like one of the biggest banks in the Soviet Union, in Russia, I guess you'd say, after the Soviet Union dissolved. And he did a lot of, you know, because the banks there are so involved with, you know, the politics and the Russian mafia and international espionage and things like that. And so he was kind of head of intelligence at a bank, which you'd think, wow, why would a bank need an intelligence agent? But so he did that for a long time. And then eventually him and his wife came here to the United States, and this is his story. Like, and so that's why it feels so authentic, I think, because here's a guy that lived in that world. And so it's great. So I highly recommend it. And the art's real good by Robert Carey. It's very visceral, and he does a great job with all the weapons. They all look authentic, and the coloring is done very well. Also, it's a nice somber palette, which really kind of suits the action that's being told. So I haven't heard a lot of people talking about Red Atlantis, but it's a good story. All right. What is your last book there, Jay?
I got DC, Black Label, Rorschach, Chapter 5. It's written by Tom King, art by George Fornes, colors Dave Stewart, and letters by Clayton Cowles. So this pretty much continues the story of the assassination attempt on the governor, Turley, because he's running for president. He's going against Redford, who's, I guess, won 4 times, going for the 5th time. So the lead detective is working on the case, and he gets, you know, he has to do a meeting with the governor, you know, to see, you know, how the case is going, which is really weird because that's like the funniest part of the story of where he has to do the meeting with him at. But then you find out that, you know, he's worked with one of the other watchmen. I'm not going to give away who, but he's worked with other watchmen before in a different place twice. And then they go through it back and forth, you know, about the story of how he met him and what protected him, that how they met and whatnot. But the other detective, not the lead, but the other detective, Alan, he asked a question at the end that kind of puts everything to perspective of the story. He asked him, you know, did he ask this? And then he kind of made him think, okay, so there's something more going behind the scenes of, you know, this assassination. It's not, you know, because he's not even believing it. The actual governor doesn't believe that. It's just two crazy people. He thinks there's more to it. And that's where they kind of leave the storyline. I don't want to get too much because there's actually a lot going on in the story.
Yeah, another great issue, man. Rorschach is, I know some people, they have a big problem with the fact that DC in the original contract said, yeah, hey, Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons, this is you own this. And whenever it goes out of print, the rights are going to revert to you. And it's never gone out of print. And so a lot of people think that DC stole it, but I can kind of see both sides. Like, yes, I agree that no creators back then were compensated fairly for their work, but they still signed the contract. So when people say, well, you know, they're continuing to make stories in that world and it's it still contributes to the theft, I don't necessarily see it that way. I mean, DC owns it. And for me, this isn't a story that really ties in that much with what they did. It's not like before Watchmen or some of the other stuff, even Doomsday Clock, where it's super derivative. This feels so different it feels the same in tone of Watchmen. You know, it's got that kind of pulpy dystopian feel, very cynical world. So he's got the tone right. But as far as the story, it doesn't really pull much, you know, other than it's, I mean, obviously it's got the name Rorschach. It's called Rorschach. And then we see the comedian and some of the other, Dr. Manhattan and what, and some of the other characters have showed up in flashback throughout the series. But this feels like its own thing. And what it feels like is really, really good. Like I never know what I'm going to get when I pick up an issue of Rorschach. Cause yeah, we're following this guy who's doing this investigation into this assassination attempt. You never know which direction the investigation is going to take him and how King is going to give us that, you know, what form is he going to give it to us in? You know, some of it, we saw him reading letters and like diary entries and such. Another issue, he went and talked to somebody who was in prison, who knew one of the people that was one of the would-be assassins. And we got flashback that way. So you never know how it's going to unfold. And I really like that. Each chapter is different.
I like it. Yeah. I like it a lot because, like you say, looking through the detective's eyes as he's going through the know, different thing. It's not like, it's about, it got the character Rorschach. I think it's just by name, but not really the character, which is kind of nice. And like I said, this cover here was pretty cool because, you know, it's got Dr. Manhattan on it. You know who that is. You know what that war, that's Vietnam. It's like, oh, okay.
So it's really good. Are you caught up on Rorschach, Manny? No.
Nope, not at the moment. I think, I need 4 and 5.
Right on. All right, what do you have for your next book?
So my last book is another DC book that's not Future State. It's, I always pick these damn books, these huge ass books. DC Universe's 80-page giant DC Love is a Battlefield, written by everyone. So it has 10 stories in it. I'm really kind of focusing on different couples. Some are better than others. Overall, I really thought that this was a really fun book, especially for the fact that this week is Valentine's Day weekend. It makes good, a good gift for your loved one. I think one of the most interesting stories, though, overall, is actually the first one, Batman and Catwoman, in the story Perfect Matches, written by Christos Gage, with art by Xer Manico, and colors by Romulo Fajardo Jr. What's funny about it is that Catwoman has been invited to Maxis's wedding on a yacht, and as her date, she brings Matches Malone, who we all know is the imperfect henchman that Bruce Wayne plays. So that made it really comical. But there's an aspect about Batman and Catwoman, which I won't give away because I was just about to, because I want to talk about it, but I shouldn't. I should let you enjoy it. That is revealed here about, it's a conversation that I hadn't seen between the two of them, about something that happened in the Tom King run. And I found it really, really interesting. And, so just on that alone, I found this entire book to be worth it because I liked it. I liked that dialogue between them. I found it. I was very upset, let's just say, when they didn't get married because of the way things unfolded. But the conversation they had between each other here, I really felt like was kind of tying up loose ends for readers and things like that. So that one was very, very good. Wonder Woman and Steve Trevor, they are featured in a story called Bittersweet by Crystal Frazier, with art by Juan Gedeon, colors by Ulysses Arriola. And this one is really interesting because of the fact that you really see Steve Trevor kind of blurt out his emotions on how he feels being really a human in a world of kind of gods and dating Wonder Woman and how he really feels about it. So that was a very good story, I think. And it has interesting dialogue between their desired villain. Another cold villain. I don't know what it is about DC and cold villains, but here we are. One that was kind of weird, but they got the right person to write it, is one called Loose Lips by Amanda Waller. So not by Amanda Waller, sorry. Featuring Amanda Waller and Perry White. It's written by Mark Russell with art by Nick Birella. And Romulo Fajardo Jr. does the colors again. Overall, it just establishes that there may be a thing between Amanda Waller and Perry White, which was super, super comical. And I think nobody but Mark Russell probably could have made this better. That was a very, very good story.
Perry White's married, so why would he ever kiss Amanda Waller? I didn't like it. I didn't like that at all.
Honestly, I never even realized that he was married. So yeah, that just makes things weird.
Yeah.
That's what I thought too.
Super weird. Yeah, super weird. And you see it coming a mile away.
Right.
And we all know how much I like Amanda Waller. So really, I'm just jealous of Perry White at this point.
Oh, I was going to ask. So you beat me to it.
God, horrible. Horrible.
Well, that just makes things weird.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Why would they do that? Oh, I don't know. They're doing all kinds of weird things. Maybe Mark Russell didn't know that. Then there's another story by Marquise Draper with art by Pop Man, colors by Chris Sotomayor, Kid Flash and Red Arrow in A Tale of Two Titans. And Kid Flash, the current Kid Flash and Green Arrow, I forget their kid's name right now, and I'm not going to go back and look them up. They're both getting ready to go out on a date. And it's a real teenager-ish story of like how they're feeling, what they're gonna wear, and blah blah blah. Very straightforward. Tim Seeley then does a great. I enjoyed it a lot. A story featuring Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy called "The Beginning," with art by Rebecca Isaacs and colors by Kurt Michael Russell. Really just. They go on a journey talking about where they, their entire life journey and how they met and things like that. And I just really liked it. I think that Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn are great together. So anytime I see them together, it makes me happy. And the way that Tim Seeley writes it and the way he ties it up in a bow and what they plan to do. I liked it. And it's, you know, they at this point they belong together and whatever, if you don't think so. John Ridley does a good John Stewart story. Obviously he would do a great John Stewart story. Fatality. It is funny because, Jace, can you tell me where she was featured in? Cause I know she was featured somewhere and I just haven't read it.
I mean, she shows up in Jeff Johns' run.
Okay, because she seems like a really cool character. And the story is called The Heart Wants, with art by Amanke Nawelpan and colors by Jun Chung. And really, it's a, you know, just John Stewart allowing her to make a decision on what she wants to do instead of him trying to poke her in one direction. And so it's really straight, again, really straightforward, but it's great. And I hope to see them again later. Sergeant Rock in a story called Able by Pornsak Pichet-Schott with art by Chris Mooneyham and colors by Mike Spencer, really showing a tale of somebody who, when he finds love, they value life more, and the soldier finds love, and he's able to tell of it because of the fact that now he doubts what he does, and he's not able to necessarily be the most efficient soldier. And I thought that it's a cool little story. I didn't know what direction that they were going to take it in. And as always, it has a very dramatic ending. That was pretty good. Nightwing and Starfire in Exposition, written by Sina Grace with art by Carl Mostert and colors by Ivan Placencia. This has some of my favorite dialogue in it because they are under the effects of like a hallucinogen, which makes them really they tell the truth and they in a very blunt way. And I just really enjoyed that there's this part where she just screams at him and says, "I want you to take me to all the bars and taste the beers and get all, you know, all the burgers." And he responds by like, "I want to buy you all the cheeseburgers." And I loved it. It was great. Oh, and like overall, that one wasn't that great, but just that dialogue, those couple of panels, I really enjoyed. Then you'd think that I would really, really love the Mr. Miracle and Big Marta anniversary story by Regine Sawyer and art by Rob Guillory and then colors by Mike Spencer. But Jesus Christ, did I hate that style of art. I did not enjoy it at all. And it really took me out of the story, even though it had two of my favorite characters. And it's interesting because the Furies show up to say their type of happy anniversary, which was really, really funny. And to tie it all up, then there's a Hawkman and Hawkwoman story called Together Forever by Kevan Scott, and pencils by Jose Luis, inked by Jonas Trinidad, and colors by Rex Locas. This one was cool just because of the fact that it reminds you of really the history between Hawkman and Hawkwoman, as far as, hey man, these two characters have been together for a very long time and they've done a lot of things together. And so this is why, you know, they're so emotional with each other and whatnot. So I thought it was done well. Overall, most of the stories are just super fun. My favorite one out of all of them, obviously, is going to be the perfect matches with Batman and Catwoman, followed by the Tim Seeley Harley Quinn the beginning story, and then in third place the Jon Stewart the Heart Wand story. I thought those three were the better of the three in the series. The only thing that I'm really upset about is if you're going to have a this is me nitpicking, a Love is a Battlefield type of comic book, where the hell is Green Arrow and Black Canary? Because I think that you can take out that Amanda Waller and Perry White story and you can put that in, or you can put a Aquaman and Mira story. And I think I would enjoy that a little bit more.
So yeah, I was kind of underwhelmed by it. Usually we get these 80 page giants. There's at least one story that you're like, oh, you know, most of them are okay, but this one was really good. There was none of them that stood out to me as being really good. Some were better than others, but it was like, you know, okay, this was like a 5 out of 10, and you know, this is like a 4 out of 10. There wasn't any that jumped up to like a 7, or you know, none of them had like really great art, or so I don't know. Maybe people just don't like to write love stories. I don't know. I thought it was
the artwork in most of them wasn't very, really spectacular. I really thought that the worst of the bunch was the one for
Mr. Miracle.
Mr. Miracle, yeah. That was like, why?
Yeah, the way Barta looks in the last panel, yeah. And they're sitting, I'm like, oh my God, she looks like a troll. Why would Scott ever have married her if she looked like that?
Well, I understand that she's supposed to be bigger and everything and whatnot because...
But she's still supposed to be human.
Yeah,
she looks like a troll.
I am not disagreeing with you at all.
Because you guys aren't Chew fans, so...
I'm not a big... I mean, it's fine. I'm not a big fan of Rob's style of art, but it works for that. But it did not work for this.
Oh, no. Maybe Team Seeley was the probably favorite one out of this.
Yeah, so... Anyway, on to my last book. It's the biggest release of the week. It's Radiant Black from writer awesome. Kyle Higgins. We have art by Marcelo Costa. Letters are by Becca Carey. And I guess Marcelo handles his own colors as well. Design and edited by Michael Busadil. I think that's how you say it. I had him on the podcast. I should know. Busadil. I can't remember how to say his name now, even though I had him on the podcast. I'm not going to say too much about this book other than I absolutely love it. You get a real kind of early Spider-Man vibe or Invincible vibe, go and listen to the interview, the Spotlight episode we did on it with Kyle Higgins and Michael Bucidal, because that tells you everything you need to know. And obviously that's all spoiler free as well. But basically it's about this guy who moved to LA and was trying to make it as a writer, and things haven't worked out, and he finds himself in like over $38,000 in debt, and he has to move back home to his parents' place in the Midwest. And he ends up getting superpowers. So how does that happen? How's he going to navigate that? There's a lot of really, really, really great images and moments in this first issue. Second issue is even better. And so it's just fun. And it's taking those ideas, like I said, Invincible, you know, kind of young hero trying to, you know, find his way. But I think they said it was issue 5 where things take a big turn. And it goes really wild in terms of kind of the story. So I know there's big things coming, and this book sold a ton of pre-orders, I think over 70,000. So there's a lot of buzz for this title, and you better pick it up. You better pick it up today. If you're listening to this episode as it drops on the 10th, and you get to your comic shop, you better pick this up, because I guarantee you, it's going to be one of those like hot books that you're going to have a hard time finding later on. So even if you thumb through it, it doesn't seem like it's for you, give it a chance. Pick up the first issue, and at the very least, you know, you may have a book that you can sell later and make a little bit of money on. So that's all I'm going to say about it, because like I said, we did the Spotlight with Kyle where we went really in depth. And if you want to hear more about it, that's spoiler free as well. Go listen to that that episode that we did a couple weeks ago. Did you get a chance to read this, Manny?
Yeah, I did. I really, really enjoyed it. I really wouldn't be surprised if this gets picked up as an option for a TV show or a movie. It just has that right premise that, you know, a lot of studios are looking for, especially now that so many of them now have their own platforms and everything that they need content for. I think it would be unique enough that that it can be really good. So what about you, I enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, I read it. It's on my pull list. I actually got 2 number 1 copies just in case it got good. But yeah, I like the story. It's clean and the artwork's nice, and it leaves you wanting more, because the end you're like, okay, so what now?
Yeah.
The last panel was pretty like, okay, I got to see the next issue.
Yeah. I agree. I think I got 2 different covers also. But I didn't, I kind of wanted, they have one, cause you know, Kyle used to write Power Rangers. They have one cover that's like the homage to those Power Ranger helmet covers, but it's like a 1 of 50 everywhere.
Oh yeah. Forget about it.
Yeah. It was like super expensive. And I'm like, I'm not a big Power Ranger guy. So I didn't end up going for that one. So, all right, well, let me give a rundown on some of the other titles you might want to be on the lookout for today. Unfortunately, we didn't get our Marvel books in time to talk about those. But we did talk about all 3 Aftershock books, Knock 'Em Dead, Red Atlantis, and Scout's Honor. I mean, they knocked it. Speaking of Knock 'Em Dead, they knocked them dead this week. Their books were fantastic. From AWA Studios, Erratic number 3 from Kari Andrews hit stands today. Speaking of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers over at Boom Studios, the 4th issue of that is out from writer Ryan Parrott. I also want to mention, so 7 Secrets, Tom King's very popular Boom Studios book, keeps going to reprints, right? They keep reprinting. I think this is the last time they're going to do these reprints for the first 6 issues. So what they've done is really cool. So they've reprinted all 6 of the first issues, but they've done them in some covers that like go together. So like on the first cover, you just see one person kind of jumping from one side of the cover, kind of toward the other side of the cover. And then in the next printing for issue 2, it's him in that same pose, but they add a couple more characters. And then issue 3, they add a couple more characters, and so on and so forth. So by the time you get to issue 6, it's like all the characters that have showed up in the book so far in like an action scene where they're all jumping across the cover. So it's a 5th printing for number 1, a 3rd printing for numbers 2 and 3. and then a second printing for issues 4, 5, and 6. So if you've been hearing about Seven Secrets and you haven't had a chance to check it out yet, here's your chance. Get them while you can. Over at DC, in addition to the books we talked about, there was also Future State Justice League number 2, Future State Kara Zor-El Superwoman number 2, Future State Robin Eternal number 2, Future State Superman Wonder Woman number 2, and Green Lantern season 2 number 11, which is the next to last book of that series. Over at IDW, G.I. Joe Real American Hero number 278, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 114. Over at Image, A Man Among Ye trade paperback. And that was Manny's most underrated series of the year for 2020. So pick up the trade and see what you missed if you didn't get a chance to check it out. Over at Marvel, Amazing Spider-Man number 59. We have the second issue of Eternals from Kieran Gillen. Fantastic Four number 29, which starts a new story arc in that book. Sword number 3. Also, Taskmaster number 3 of 5 from Jed McKay. The third issue of 4 from Wolverine Black, White, and Blood. And X-Force number 17. And I think that's it for this week. Yep. So I think that's going to do it for this episode. As Manny and I said, Knock 'Em Dead is our book of the week. Radiant Black, it's kind of a toss-up. That's a really great book as well, but I'm going to give the nod to Knock 'Em Dead because, honestly, Elliot Rahal could use the boost, whereas Kyle Higgins knocked out of the park with, you know, over 70,000 pre-orders for his number one title, so congratulations to him. Any particular book you want to give a shout-out to as your book of the week, Jay?
I'll go with Radiant Black. I like that a lot.
All right. Sounds good. Well, everybody, that's going to do it for this episode. We want to thank you for listening, as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.